You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
Oh, I fell in love more than I could wish. Oh, oh, my angel fish. Oh, oh, my angel fish. Oh, oh, my angel fish.
That song is Angel Fish by C. Burroughs. That's the stage name for Chris Andrews, a native of Sutton's Bay. There is a special rhythm to that song. Perhaps the pace of walking? Well, that very well could be, because Chris Andrews wrote that song and others on his new album, Angel Fish, while he walked across America. Chris Andrews is here with us now. Welcome, Chris. You walked 3,200 miles across the USA?
Yes, that's right.
Why did you do that?
Well, the whole idea to walk across the United States actually began 2 years before I ever took my first step. And really, the motivation for the whole journey was to spread a message, a simple message about finding balance in how we use our digital devices. It was simple. You know, I was a college student. I was in my third year, and I was, you know, basically in such a close relationship with my phone. It was the first thing I did when I woke up and the last thing I did when I went to bed. And I knew there was something that was unhealthy about that. And I saw that my friends were doing that too. My family was also as plugged in as I was. And, you know, as one 20-year-old, I felt like it was such a large issue. I didn't know how I would ever start addressing it. But I thought, if I can grab people's attention, then maybe I can start to move the needle in the way we perceive the value of simple face-to-face conversation, life beyond the screen. And so I thought, you know what, maybe if I walked across the country, people would say, wait a second, you know, what is this guy doing and why is he doing it? And so that was my original motivation for the trek across the country.
So it would give you, in the words of Teddy Roosevelt, a bully pulpit in which to kind of spread this message.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So the idea of writing a bunch of new songs for an album was not a part of the plan?
No. In fact, you know, I've been a musician my whole life, grew up a jazz drummer and started playing guitar when I was at university in Scotland. But this journey was mainly for this message, and I never really imagined that I would finish with a full album on my hands. But, you know, I was given a guitar the day before I began my trip, and it actually fit perfectly in this three-wheeled cart that I pushed all the way across the country with about an inch to spare. And so I said, oh, you know what, maybe I'll bring this thing. And as the trip progressed, I just started to use my music as a way to process what was happening, to understand the stories and, you know, also something to do in my tent at night. I was sleeping in people's lawns most of the time. I was walking across the country and I was trying to practice what I preach and find something other than scrolling through my phone, you know, to do at night. So I picked up my guitar and I wrote songs and that began to tell the story of my journey.
Give us a sense of the logistics of this. I mean, what was your path? How long did it take you to walk it? And how did you set that all up?
Yeah, so, you know, I started with a large gear list of probably more than I needed to carry, but I started from Washington, D.C. in August, and I walked south, sort of towards Nashville, and then down through Mississippi and Arkansas, then down through Texas, and by the time the winter came, I was in the south and could avoid some of the cold, and then finished in Los Angeles, California, in the spring in about March. And I was walking between 20 and 30 miles a day. People are always curious. I went through 7 pairs of shoes on that trip. I made a little tick mark with every conversation that I had along the way, and I had 10,300, and I don't know the exact number in my head right now, but over 10,000 conversations and interviews along the way, and probably over 150 lawns that I slept in as well.
Did you have an advance team helping you set up where you were going to sleep, or would you just look at an inviting house and maybe knock on the door and hope for the best?
Well, you know, the truth is my girlfriend at the time, my fiance now, was a critical piece in this whole project. She coordinated my relationship with sponsors who helped get me equipment, with schools helping me speak to students about this message, with news stations, newspapers, radio stations. And so she, and also, you know, helping me figure out where I was going to be at the end of the night, working with communities. And so I think, you know, behind the scenes, she was a big part of the whole project and continues to be moving forward.
Chris, I am really interested in the lessons you learned during your walk. First, just about the people you met.
Yeah, I'd never been to the South. I was crossing the United States at quite an interesting time.
What year did you do this?
I did this in 2016.
Ah.
And so, you know, I was entering a part of the country that was completely unknown to me. And I was forced to rely on people every single night. I knocked on about 5 to 10 doors, I would say, every night on average. And I'd say, you know, this is what I'm doing. Do you have any suggestions on a place where I might be able to stay? Or can I pitch my tent in your lawn? And people welcomed me in. They gave me what they had. They gave me life. They gave me refuge. But, you know, the way that I like to describe it in terms of my relationship with the people along the way is, you know, the East was very intense. It was a game of survival for me, and I was relying on people every night for basic necessities. And they gave me that. They gave me that life. But it was, you know, nonetheless, a really intense experience. And then as I made my way westward, the country started to open up. The hills of Virginia became the delta of Mississippi, which became the desert of the West. And with that came a certain sense of freedom, a sense of, you know, this federally owned land is actually mine, and I can, as it is yours and as it is all of ours. And so I could pitch my tent and relax a little bit. And it gave me some space to process the East and the intense experience that that was. And so it really gave me an opportunity to understand that generosity, to try to come to terms with everything that I had seen, both the disturbing and the enlightening and the complex experience that it was.
You say intense, and you talk about things you saw that were disturbing, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't like to dwell on these too much because they were so few and far between. But whether it was being in a survivalist underground bunker or finding my way into a house that, you know, was not a safe place for me because of the weapons and the drugs that I saw, for example. You know, but those were such rare occasions. And when I did find myself in a situation where I felt like it was better for me to move on, I was always met with kindness. And I was always sensitive about the situation. So I never felt like I was in a, you know, a confrontation with someone, but more just me observing and saying, this might not be the best place for me to spend the night.
What most surprised you about this 3,200-mile walk across the U.S.?
You know, I think what surprised me most was that I found an answer to my question. Because at the beginning, I didn't really voice this, but deep down, I wanted to find out what was at stake for me and for our society in our relationship with our phones. And I had this question. You know, I probably didn't even voice it to myself, but I went out, you know, I saw the research. I saw that our community is being affected by our relationship with our phones. Our youth is more depressed or anxious than ever. Our adults are just as sucked in as the children. And so, you know, I began this trip with a concern for myself and others, but I didn't really know what to do. And as I made my way west, what surprised me about this journey is that the act of walking for 210 days for 3,000 miles gave me answers to the question of what is at stake. And in simple terms, that is connection to ourselves and connection to the people around us.
And you had a chance to do that. And now you've turned all of this into this project you call Let's Talk. Tell us how you're going to be getting this message out.
Yeah, so I'm also writing a book about this that will be coming out in the coming year. And my music is another part of it. The documentary about my project will be released in the coming months as well. Hopefully that will be floating around the country and, you know, give some people some context on my trip and some value that they can use in their lives. Because that's, you know, that's really what I hope for Let's Talk project now, is to give people something. You know, I have gained so much from this journey, but now it is time for me to take what I've learned and give it back to people.
I know you're going to be speaking at schools around the country as part of the Let's Talk project. What would you say is your call to action when you speak?
You know, my call to action is that this is a problem. And, you know, not to say that technology is bad. In fact, I celebrate the power of technology to bring us together in some cases. It is an incredible tool for us to communicate. It is an incredible tool for us to learn. But my call to action is looking at the research, looking at the truth. As a society, we sort of walked into this relationship with our phones as being incredible, that there were no downfalls. It was just more, and more is better. But as I start to hear the research coming out about our kids who are depressed or our parents who are less patient, empathy is in real risk right now. And I believe that. And so that call to action, I think, comes at the same time as the truth, as it trickles out of research institutions that we respect as a society. And so I think that's going to continue to happen. We're going to continue to see the response or sort of the reaction to our addiction to technology and especially to our phones in the coming years. So, you know, I don't think this is something that is going to be solved overnight. But my call to action is to be a story that inspires people to change their own behavior. My call to action is that the research is coming out and I see very little change happening. I see the same, you know, amount of kids or adults who are walking down the street or sitting across the table from each other and are looking down at their phones. You know, the research isn't inspiring us enough as a society. And so I hope the Let's Talk Project stands in front of people as a story, as something that people can grab onto and see the truth in. And then, you know, be a catalyst for their own change, for their own behavioral change, for the better, for personal growth, for, you know, whatever they want.
You can learn more and listen to the album Angel Fish by going to cburrowsmusic.com and the Let's Talk Project website. You can go to letstalkusa.com. Chris Andrews, it's a remarkable journey, and thanks so much for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.